Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group. And as I just previously stated, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest is personal to me because he is actually my mindfulness coach. Yes, everybody, I go through the CPT. Obviously, Nicholas, you will elaborate on that with your expertise, but to be able to now starting to lament mindfulness practices in my life, as well as now really looking at things differently from this perspective, looking at life in this perspective, has tremendously helped me grow as an individual, as a professional, and like I stated before, my personal life. So it is an absolute honor, a personal honor, to have Nicholas Clay, who is the CEO, founder of Being One World, but also I would like to say a master when it comes to these practices, unwrapping these practices of mindfulness, of mediation, as well as looking into your own personal aspect of your life to make positive life changes. So, Nick, I hope I didn't diminish the introduction. Obviously, you know, this is for one time in my life, I don't feel like I really have a strong baseline around the research, the cognitive theory, as well as the therapeutic practices and therapy that we're going to unwrap today. But Nicholas, I hope I served you correctly, man, but I could tell you from a personal context, what you have been to my life as this mindfulness coach, as somebody that continuously to unwrap specific elements of these practices and integrate it into my life. It has absolutely changed my life for the better, both personally as well as professionally. So Nicholas, thank you for that, but welcome to Voices for Excellence.
Yeah, great to be here, and I appreciate you. And again, it's great to hear the benefit that you're receiving, and I hope out of this talk we can ripple that effect even further.
Absolutely, and Nicholas, I'm going to say this because I'm the host, right? If you have changed my life from our sessions, from your intense cognitive coaching, challenging me with your descriptive and prescriptive questions, I would just hope that my audience will be able to reach out to you specifically, because if you could change my life, I know for sure you'll be able to enhance and accelerate their own personal and professional goals. But let's get into this, Nick, because A, I want to learn for myself more. B, I consider this a free session. And C, I just want to share your expertise and your knowledge with the world, both domestically and internationally. But let's start off with a fun question, right? Because I want to be able to see what is the song that drives Nicholas Clay. But your organization, Be in One World, work as a mindfulness coach and a national voice and leader, which you are in the cognitive behavioral therapy world, has assisted individuals in the education ecosystem, both personally as well as professionally. You are well known across the country, but what song defines Nicholas Clay with this important work? Specifically, we have educators right here, this specific work in the AC stage of education.
Yeah, so currently when asked that question, the song that comes to mind that resonates the most with me, it's Good Energy by Young Weiland.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage anyone, when you listen to that song, carefully listen to the lyrics. And that's the essence of what would define me at this current state. And especially, so if I get into another deeper layer, everything of reality at the fundamental level is energy, vibration, information. And the way that this artist speaks about just having good energy is a big aspect of what it is to operate from our higher states of consciousness, which is energy. So that would be the song.
Absolutely. And Nick, if you can just kind of elaborate, right? When we talk about, I look at those three critical elements of energy, vibration, and sensation, right?
Information.
Yes. And you talk about being at that higher state. If you can just elaborate on that for my audience so that there's this level set definition of the understanding of those three important elements.
Mm-hmm. David R. Hawkins actually put this together, and this is through the study of kinesiology, so the study of muscle strength based on the state of mind. And so what he ended up calibrating was the map of consciousness, which shows our 17 states of experience. So consciousness being experience. And there's, you can also practically divide that into two. You have your higher mind, your lower mind, and courage, what I consider the bridge. Go a step further. Dr. Joe Dispenza, he's really big into this area as well. And he's mapped, he's created a map based on different brain waves, based on the state of mind somebody's in. So now you have this energy map, this map based on kinesiology. You have Dr. Joe Dispenza's map based on actual brain waves. And you put those maps together and you see a near parallel connection there, truly showing that there's a difference on how our vibration of consciousness is based on what state of mind we're in. So now we have this calibration. If you look at the map of consciousness, shame is the lowest state.
Yeah.
And the highest state is enlightenment. Yeah. And enlightenment, we hear this word, and I feel that oftentimes it gets overly mystical. Yeah. And so the way I defined it so that it's understood practically is enlightenment is pure observation, pure awareness. It's observation void of judgment. Purely being aware of something without giving any judgment to it. The example I like to use is looking at a tree without it needing to be a tree. Because once upon a time, before a human named it, it wasn't a tree.
Right.
It just was what it is.
Right. No, Nick, and this is great, right? Because I know personally with our work together, right, we've been focusing on this level of awareness and the higher mind, lower mind state, awareness of your conscience, and specifically looking at things from a non-judgmental standpoint. Obviously, I would want my audience to be able to really dig deep with you, you know, with regards to this, I like to say this two-part phenomenon, right? Maybe that's not correct, but, you know, two-part phenomenon of the lower mind and higher mind, and having this conscious awareness of where you're at in that state of mind. Specifically, Nick, I know how you've been challenging me to look at it from this dimension of where I'm at, right? The present tense, which is absolutely, absolutely phenomenal with that. The higher mind, lower mind, obviously we'll get into that within the actual podcast episode itself. But I want to talk about your organization, right? Being One World, which is based out of New York. And you have a myriad of clients that includes, you know, district and school stakeholders, teachers, leaders, a myriad of different people in education. Obviously, your work goes beyond education, but again, I'm just putting it in this linear context. So for my audience, what is your organization's mission and vision? Also, how is your organization different in the context of therapeutic practices that are being underscored in Being One World?
Yeah, great question. On the micro level, the mission is supporting, empowering people to be the highest expression of self while maintaining a clear and balanced mind. And on the macro view, the vision is in the world of healing and pivoting the wave of unaddressed hurt and trauma, mm-hmm. this world, which has nearly all of us living so much more in the past than we realize, which doesn't allow us to embrace life fully.
Now, and Nick, and I just want to, and I apologize for interjecting, right? I want to just ask, this is more just a sub-variant, right? Because I think you hit on it, that a lot of people do experience in the present tense, which is living in the past, right? How is your work moving people to move beyond living in the past, per se?
The way I look at it as, so we're finding the triggers of experience that have not been fully processed or completed that are still creating an interference in the present moment. So we're going back to those moments and we're uprooting them. So that way we can dissolve that energetic connection to the past. Yeah. And it gives more attention, awareness, and focus to the present. Another way you can look at it, if we look at our full capacity of awareness as having a 100% of our light, and then something happens, you know, something happened when we were 10, and we create a layer of defense from that. Well, maybe that takes up 10% of our light. So now we're only present with 90% because 10% needs to hold on to this wound and create this defense. So we're not able to be fully present, and then so on and so forth. So our light gets diminished as more and more of these wounds and defenses get created. And then it's going back to uproot that or complete that or process that. So that way we can have that full awareness back. And the beautiful part about when it gets truly completed and processed, and this gets, I think, into the differentiator, is I don't teach coping mechanisms. I teach how to heal. I teach in a way that it's removed and then it no longer needs to be worried about. It's just not there. It's just literally not there. It's one of the coolest experiences that I've ever had in life, to truly remove and process stored negative energy and not have it there. And I'll give a practical example of this. I'll make it a little lighter. Something that many people can relate to is being in traffic and having many things that can trigger us and we get mad, whether it's somebody getting in front of us, not using a directional, driving a certain way, whatever it is, many people can relate to that kind of a trigger. Well, imagine being able to release whatever that is that's pushing that button, so that people are still going to drive the way they're going to drive, and then being in traffic and not experiencing that trigger whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that's what's possible. And it can be done on the lightest of examples and the deepest of examples.
Absolutely. Nick, one thing that I know we're working through, right, is being able to look at, you know, whether it be specific triggers, whether it be specific past experiences, to be able to move forward from that and looking at that, look at it from that perspective, this healing perspective, which I think is just absolutely phenomenal. I can tell you, everybody, to my audience, mindfulness is a very, very meaningful practice. You know, myriad of people have told me to start to underscore this in my life. And then finally I did. And I said, I want the best. You got to find me the absolute best who can be able to challenge me from a personal and professional perspective. And here's Nicholas Clay. He made VFE as well. So obviously he has to be having some impact on me. But Nick, I want to get down into the intricacies, right? And I know we have many of these conversations with regards to, I like to say, this cognitive approach to therapy, right? If you think about it, it's an outlier to traditional methods and strategies that are underpinned in traditional therapeutic settings, right? You even said it. You don't teach coping mechanisms. You teach how to heal. We see now, and I did some internal research, Nick, thank you. That's how you challenge me, right? I did some internal research. And when I did this research, I'm finding that now, and this is from this meta-analysis that I underscored, therapists and psychologists, right, or psychologists, I apologize, they're starting to incorporate mindfulness techniques into their practice. So we're starting to hear more about that. Now, people might not understand the full concept of what mindfulness is in totality. So for level setting purposes, and for a consensus definition, can you please provide a definition of mindfulness therapy?
Yeah, I'll start with mindfulness, because the way that I go about the healing and therapy techniques expands well beyond what we would probably consider mindfulness. Mindfulness is an intentional focus on the present moment with our full awareness.
Yeah.
And then the therapy aspect of it is, from that practice of presence, it gets easier to isolate what is causing the pull out of being present. And then when you find those indicators, the therapy is about then tracing that back to do the work that needs to be done so that it can be fully present again. So you're creating a stronger baseline of recognizing what it is to be present. And the stronger that becomes, then it becomes, you get a higher sense of indication when you're not being present. If we don't realize what it is to be present in the first place, then people, you just go through life, you go through it every single day, and you don't put much of a thought into where you're being present or not. So in a way, we're teaching people to actually recognize what presence is. Yeah. So then they can recognize when they're not being present. And then the stronger that you can practice being present moving forward day to day, the more that you're going to be apt to not hold on to things anymore. Because again, you realize what being present is. And then if you're holding on to something, that's already happened. And there's a wonderful parable about two monks that talk about this. In short, these two monks are walking through the woods, and they come across a woman. And there's this stream, this light stream they got to walk across. And the older monk picks up the woman to go to the other side and sets her down. And the younger monk is like, what did I just witness? Because monks take a vow, they're not permitted to touch a woman. So they're walking through the woods as the story goes. An hour goes by, 2 hours, 3 hours go by. And the younger monk is like, this is just building up. He can't believe what he just witnessed. It's disturbing him. And then finally he stops and he goes, you know, how could you pick up that woman? We're not permitted to touch a woman. Why would you do that? And so the older monk goes, brother, I set that woman down hours ago. Why are you still carrying her?
Wow. Got it. So living in the past, huh?
Mm-hmm. That's a practical example of what it looks like.
Unbelievable. So now, wow. Okay. That created dissonance for me. Didn't expect that as the end outcome, but Nicholas, just elaborate on this too, right? Because I just want to make sure for clarification purposes. So you're bringing in this science, right? This science into mindfulness practices so that now you can be descriptive on specific self-indicators to address A, whether it be healing, B, whether it be to be at that present state, right? And to see, to be able to apply these strategies to be in this continuous state of presence with regards to the science behind the mindfulness practices. Did I capture that correctly? Or, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah.
Please elaborate on it, Nick. I mean, just kind of like.
My mind goes through. That was great. You captured
it. Okay, good. I'm not an expert in this, Nick, so I'm leaning on you, brother. This is not education.
Yeah, you know, it's great. My mind goes to as you're sharing, and you know, if we have the space for it, great. If not, that's okay as well. The best way I could explain it, because there's so much more that goes behind what I'm doing, and it all started from my personal journey. And if we have space for that, I'd like to share. And if not, that's okay.
Yeah, do it right now, please.
Yeah, so I get this is the essence of what allows me to do what I do today. Started with a book recommendation. Mm-hmm. And I started reading a book by Eckhart Tolle. And I got through the first couple of chapters, and it seemed too good to be true. I mean, in my mind, I thought to myself, like, nah, there's no way. This didn't make sense. Why wouldn't everybody just read this book and we'd have a great world? And it just didn't make sense. And growing up, at least from the circumstances I'm from, if something's too good to be true, or many people hold this, then it's there's probably something up with it. And then I thought to myself, well, this is about life, and what's the best way to test this is just throw myself into it. You know, if it works, it's work. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And as I was learning these practices, I saw this opportunity to be able to, at that time, I've discovered so much more about myself since then. However, at that time, I was highly aware of the level of anger and certain negative energies that I had within me from, you know, certain childhood experiences. And I saw this opportunity to be able to actually release that once and for all. And I never enjoyed having that energy inside me, especially when it would take over in moments of anger, which I didn't have a good relationship with. So it was actually a traffic example for me that was the catalyst. I was behind this slower car, and I'm much calmer nowadays. However, I certainly have liked to get from A to B, which anyone who knows me understands.
I'll tell you, Nicholas, because of you, I'm much more calmer now as well.
Yeah. And so I'm behind this slow car, and I was truly frustrated. And I thought to myself, what better way to test this teaching than in an area where I'm actually feeling this feeling? And I did one of the practices, and the best that I could explain it is that I felt something move within me, and it was like energy that just came up through my system and left.
Yeah.
And I started to smile, and then I started laughing for like the next 30 minutes. I couldn't believe what just happened. And I wanted to understand more of what that was. And since then, I haven't had any triggers through traffic sense. And through practicing what this certain tool was. And then I became obsessed. So I needed to understand what that was. There's something about us that we're not being taught. There's something about this human experience that we're not doing an adequate job in the world of understanding and explaining. And so from that point on, I started to intentionally seek out as much relevant information as I possibly could. And I started learning all about the mind, the human. So this went to spiritual books. This went to books on consciousness. This went to books on neuroscience, neuroplasticity, consciousness, energy, empathy, just one after another. And I started seeing that there is this commonality, that it seemed like everybody was saying the same thing. There was this overlapping here. And the more I practiced, the more I was able to change my internal environment, my internal experience, the more I was able to release more and more and more. I started taking a new approach to how I was interacting with people, started making certain predictions to test this information out, and looking to curb a confirmation bias, I took an approach, at least I thought this would be a beneficial approach. I took an approach of trying to be wrong.
Yeah.
To curb anything where, you know, because if you're seeking to be right, that's easy to do. So if you're seeking to be wrong, it truly, I find, validates the information for what it is. And I use this a lot in my discussions, is looking at gravity. See, when you find a universal truth, it doesn't matter what you think, believe, or can conceive. If you walk off a roof, you're going to fall. That's just the way it works. It's a universal truth. So what I found was, I think there's a universal truth in this information. And if I look to be wrong, then if it works, then it's going to work regardless. And then through my own experience, I got to a certain point where then I noticed there was a value in the world. And I think like most entrepreneurs or all, we see an area in something that we think we can improve upon.
Sure.
And one thing that I noticed that seemed to be lacking, and this I think gets us back to like traditional therapy and what's the difference. One thing I noticed that seems to be lacking is there's a lot of smart people in the world that intellectually learn and get certain information. Yet when you're dealing with a human-to-human connection and interaction, you're limited by the depth in which you can truly be with somebody, proportional to the depth in which you can be with yourself. And this is what I found has allowed me to connect with people on the deepest of levels, because I've traveled into this space within myself. So there is virtually no depth or conversation that I'm uncomfortable going into, because I've been there already. And one thing that unites us all is experience. See, we all are connected through experience. The only thing that creates a difference is the story in which we wrap around that experience. So, for example, I've had experience of anger. You've had an experience of anger. Well, in that we relate. Now, we can go through the different intensities of that, which gets a little harder to calibrate, yet the experience in itself is not. That experience is understood. within the sameness. The difference, though, is the story around that anger. Your story is most likely going to look completely different than my story, yet the experience is the same. And that's the connector. So when you can sit with someone at that depth of experience, then you can see people through the purity of, again, everything at its source is energy, vibration, information. And when you can learn to understand the distinction between the two, then it becomes easy to recognize the experience, and then you can be with someone around their story and then help unravel that. So coming full circle, the differentiator is, I think, the obsession in which I've had and the multitude of angles in which I've looked at the system, and then having a way to see this overlapping. And I've also taken a Gallup poll and come to find out that my strongest strength in thinking is strategic thinking. And I think that's what's allowed me to see all these different facets and be able to connect it in a way that I think a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah. And when you talk about Gallup, right? when I took the Gallup study, Nicholas, and obviously we can, you know, unwrap this further, that domain that you're talking about, I had two distinctions in there, strategic and analytical. And those two together, that's not a good combination. You know that. But speaking of strategic and analytical, right? And Nick, and I want to thank you for this, because as you were providing your response, right? And this is how I'm starting to look at things from a diagnostic analytical sense, is that conversations that I'm having with people, I'm starting to look at it from this two-part phenomenon of their responses are pure feelings versus what the actual or the factual states or the factual information is with that. You got me really thinking about that left brain versus right brain, where now emotions, you know, when people are expressing their feelings, a lot of it is grounded on emotions, right? And when I start to now part and parcel that, being aware of where I'm at and then analyzing the situation from this factual versus feeling standpoint, now I'm starting to get or really unwrap this whole thing around universal truth, right? And I think that is awesome, Nick, that you provided that and the depth of experience with that and just being in this present state. I want to unwrap, I want to get into the next question, because I want to unwrap present state, right? Because I think that's really vitally important. And I think that's one of the critical themes that I'm starting to learn from these practices or from our coaching sessions, is around being in the present state. So I did, again, some research. And to my audience, if you think I read a lot, you think I, you know, retain a lot of information, Nicholas is my Siamese twin when it comes to, you know, white papers, research. I'll tell you this, Nick is the only person so far within the past, I would say, 5 years to give me homework. And I have homework to complete. So yes, Nick, thank you for that. But Nick, when we talk about present state, right, I want to talk about these four P's: positivity, prosperity, peace, and productivity, right? Can you unpack each of those components when we speak about the present state?
Yeah. So I actually had a conversation yesterday about this. Positivity, you can look at positive, negative, two sides of the same coin. Okay. The coin's always there. There's always a positive perspective and a negative perspective. What I found is that a negative perspective is going to instill a defensive nature, a contracted nature, a limited nature, where positivity is going to allow for understanding, growth, conscious boundaries, mm-hmm. a set of unconscious defensive boundaries. It allows for exploration. And it's understanding, you know, what truth is it that you want to look through? The negativity is always going to be there. There's always that side of the coin. And the positivity is always going to be there. And it comes down to what's going to benefit you the most. And I can assure you in the audience and anyone, there's so much research on this nowadays where it's irrefutable that a positive lens is more productive and nurturing to our overall mental state, our mind, our neuroplasticity growth. It's a higher performing lens in which to look at things as opposed to negativity. So that's how I would unpack the positivity lens. Also shows a mental strength. So if many people may not realize this, we have a built-in negative bias. Our default state is for survival. Mm-hmm. And hence the negativity bias. You know, we're here to survive. I say this all the time. The brain doesn't care if you're happy at work. It cares about surviving first and foremost. And so to practice that positivity is also practicing a mental strength, because it takes a little conscious effort to do that. The default is negativity. The next one, I think the second one.
Prosperity.
What was it?
Prosperity.
Prosperity. So that and I'm going to use another word I think will resonate more with people, and especially in the world of self-development and business, it's abundance.
Mm.
It's having abundance mentality. It's coming from that you already have. The universe tends to, the universe doesn't operate with a moral compass like us humans do. It operates from a response in which how we're vibrating, what we're putting out. So if we're coming from a lack, then we're always going to have that lack. We come from abundance, and we come from what we already have, and it's already ours. The other part is just the process to what we call manifesting it in the world. And that sometimes takes a bit of time. Right?
Absolutely.
So that's how I would unpack prosperity, having an abundance mindset. And then what was the next one?
It was peace and productivity.
Peace. Really. Yeah. So when I hear peace, and again, I found that there's a benefit to create tangible analogies to get these words. So peace, I look at as a completely calm and still body of water. That's peace. Now take that analogy and apply that towards our internal state. And that's peace. When our internal state is completely calm, relaxed, we want to get into a science angle of this. It's a difference between our parasympathetic nervous system, mm-hmm. calm, relaxed, safe, as opposed to having our sympathetic nervous system activated, which is fight or flight. I'm in danger. I'm not safe. Got to watch out. And many, many people are in this chronic state, stuck in a sympathetic state within their nervous system, meaning that people are going through day by day, stuck in emergency mode, stuck in fight or flight mode, which is extremely taxing to our system. It's like running from the lion for 20 hours a day just becomes unsustainable. So peace is that everything's okay state internally.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then the last one
is productivity.
Productivity. So here's, I'm gonna add a little something here. So something that is abundantly experienced nowadays is anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
One area in which anxiety can be nullified is by being productive. See, one of the ways in which we experience it is because we have things to get done. When we actually put ourselves in action and start doing those things, the anxiety will subside. Now, that's not a blanket to anxiety. I mean, there's other areas in which it comes up and how it affects us. That, though, is one way in which it overall will lower our experience of it is being productive, being in action, moving. Again, the human system was designed to be in a much higher level of action and movement than we are today. We started as hunters and gatherers. However, we live in a day, we live in a world today where comfort is of abundance. And so it's important for us to remember where we come from. And when I say we humans, and when I say come from, I don't mean parents and grandparents and great grandparents. I mean, like, where do humans come from 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 years ago? Because we're still that same organism. And so productivity is something that's ingrained in us. It goes into, you know, working out, being productive with our body physically. We know there's a lot of happy chemicals that get released when we do that. when you were productive, there's a sense of accomplishment. Oh, I got that done. One of the simplest and well-studied things that we can do is the positive benefit of making the bed in the morning.
Absolutely.
So you start your day off with an accomplishment of being productive. We always feel good when we get that job task done or that emailed answer, because now we don't have to worry about the 30 or 100. And some people, I get a tremendous amount of emails every day. If we're productive when we go through it, and it's done.
Absolutely.
It's not a worry anymore. So that's how I would unpack those.
And to my audience, that was the answer that Nick provided to you. Nick, we use this as an asynchronous professional learning tool so that we can be able to rewind certain aspects of an episode so that we can go deeper, right? I like to say that heterodoxy, self-directed learning, your answer that you provided, your response that you provided, that is a good response for my audience to unwrap the four P's and how you, I like to say, you coupled research and science with regards to those elements of mindfulness. Thank you for that, Nicholas. But now I kind of want to segue into your answer that you provided with this next question, right? And this is going to be just linear in the context for education, right? Because I want to bring it back to the two new generations that we are educating in PK-12 today, which is Generation Z and Generation Alpha, right? We know that, Nicholas, there are specific demographic and sociographic shifts that we're seeing, which now is being emulated in the AC stage of education and in our schools. Addressing, and this is a contentious conversation that we're having in education today, but is needed, addressing the social, emotional, and cognitive needs of our students. They've become complex, right? They become arduous in task. So for leaders and teachers that tune into Voices for Excellence, which strategies or systems level approach should one take if they want to incorporate these type of practices in their teach and learn organizations or classrooms?
Yep. First and foremost, practice it yourself. One of the biggest feedbacks I've gotten from educators when they are speaking with me is that they don't feel authentic to bring it to the classroom. If you want to feel authentic, bring it to the classroom, practice it yourself. And then the second step is bring it to the classroom. You can start off with it can be as brief as a 5-minute meditation before class starts every single day. We need the consistency. It needs to be a practice that's instilled, not a one-off. We've all been kids, and kids are highly they're highly attuned to spotting out fallacies or we need to be consistent. That's what I'm trying to say. And maybe I was looking to overcomplicate it. We need to be consistent. So if it's a one-off, it's not going to resonate. It's not going to hold ground. It truly needs to be a consistent practice that's put in place, and then it'll sustain itself. So first and foremost, practice it yourself. Mm-hmm. And then bring in that 5-minute meditation before class, and then ask them how it makes them feel.
Absolutely.
A lot of times people don't connect the benefit of what they just had, or their thinking goes back to the two sides of the coin. They're thinking negative side. Oh, this was boring, or, it was tough to do, or I was just in my head. Having them focus on what was the positive experience that they had. What we put our focus on is what grows. So if we put our focus on the negative side, that's all we're going to see. You put their focus on the positive side, then that's what they'll see. And then it'll take hold of itself. They're going to feel better. They're going to perform better in class. That brings back a sense of accomplishment because they're going to do better. And then that feels good. All kids want to do well. They need to be supported, though, to be able to do that. And some need more support than others. So to answer your question, just put it in place and be consistent with it.
Absolutely. And when we talk about productivity, right, one of the four P's that we were just unwrapping, or what you just eloquently stated and provided that definition for it, we will see an increase of productivity from our students, right? When we just incorporate 5 minutes of those mindfulness practices. And even to a point now, Nicholas, we're actually seeing student meditation for Generation Z and Generation Alpha who are actively practicing mindfulness. But obviously, I would want my audience to be able to reach out to you to look at how they could systematize this, whether it be within their learning organization or even within their classrooms or teachers within their classrooms. But last question, right? And take it how it is, right? And I would infer you're a rule follower, but for this last question, people don't follow the rules on this, right? Because that's putting a limitation, right? That's that negative connotation to it, but take it how it is, okay, Nick? But what three words do you want today's audience to lead our episode with regarding reaching this level of self-awareness? This is one of the things that you have really embedded and ingrained in my practices, right? Self-awareness to be present with their physical, mental, and emotional state of mind.
Discovery hides within.
Please elaborate, Nick.
Well, then that's one in three words.
Selfishly elaborate. Break the rules, Nick. Break the rules.
No matter what it may look like, no matter what the reason anyone can come up with, the answers always lie within. It's never without. It's introspection to discover self. Go a step further. This goes back to educators and what we're dealing with the world. But it's not a surprise what we're seeing in younger generations now. The word I was looking for earlier, when we are children, when we're younger, we're highly intuitive. Our intuition is among the highest before our defense is set in and kind of start blocking that out. And two fundamental needs that we come into the world with, strong needs, are a healthy attachment to our caregivers and a need for authenticity. See, we have so much judgment in the world, though. So next to nobody can truly discover their authentic self, because that's not actually accepted by the level of judgment by caregivers and other adults around them. And so what happens is we begin to sacrifice ourselves to contort ourselves to be what we think we need to be, so that way we can maintain the what becomes an unhealthy attachment. And we lose ourselves because of that salient need that we all have within us. And this is where the healing process and discovering self comes in. It's not external. Many of us will spend a lifetime looking for ourselves outside of ourselves. It was always already there. It's inside of us. And this is the internal journey that anyone that goes through a healing process, this is what monks go through when they're going through their internal process. This is a big part of meditation. This is why some people actually find it uncomfortable to meditate. I've led some people through meditation and they start crying within the first minute or two because it's uncomfortable for what they're experiencing internally. Yet that's what we need to go through. The answer never moves. The self never moves. The authentic self is within. So if you want to discover self, we need to realize that along the way we lost ourselves. And to get that back, we need to start drilling, so to speak, venturing deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into us, define that authentic self, and then create that healthy attachment with self. And then we'll no longer seek it in an unhealthy and toxic nature outside of self.
Absolutely. Nick, well stated. I tell you, this episode is needed at this time, right? You know, when we think about where we're at in the current state of education, the immense polarization that we're seeing within the world, this highly politicized world that we're living into, whether it be personally or from the education sense, these practices are universal, as you stated. I love how you said the universal truth, right? And really addressing that. Nicholas, how would my audience be able to get in contact with you if they want to reach out to you further.
Yeah, beingoneworld.com is a site, and that from there you can easily find the contact, and you can email me, or you can book time with me, or I also have an intake on there you can take that also has a link to book time. And then from there, I'm really easy to find on social media, Nicholas Cassius Clay, or Being One World, either or, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. So I make myself as accessible as possible. I like to think I'm easy to find.
Absolutely. You are easy to find, Nick. I'll tell you that personally. And to my audience out there, yes, I personally recommend Nick. Nick is my coach. We meet frequently and regularly, and I can tell you right now, he has changed my life. He has challenged me from a cognitive sense, when we talk about conceptual rigor in the linear domain of education. Nick has challenged me from a conceptual rigorous standpoint of looking at myself and really unwrapping this universal truth of awareness and being non-judgmental. So, Nicholas, you made it through VFE. Congratulations, brother.
Thank you. Well, it's been an honor and a pleasure to be here, and I certainly enjoyed this conversation with you.
Absolutely, Nicholas, and thank you so much for coming on. I just wanted to share your expertise with the world and how your work has impacted my life. And if it can impact my life, I'm sure it can impact my audience's life. So please reach out to Nicholas. He gave you his information, a lot of good information here that you can take back. Look at the alignment. Think Like a Monk is a great book. I highly recommend that. Yes, it's non-educational research sense. Yes, there's no theoretical underpinnings when we talk about education from that didactyl lens, but I can tell you it is one of the most provocative text that can impact your life in a variety of different ways, including in the education ecosystem. So thank you, Nicholas, for appearing on VFE. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.